welcome. You're tuned into the best in true crime talk radio. This is True Crime Tuesday. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Dumb crimes and stupid criminals, Tim. I think we should just turn the damn show into that. There's too many dark stories out there, man. I've been, you know, on the road traveling now.
Yep.
And my one companion in every city, Tim, is Investigation ID or HLN, watching Forensic Files. And when I have trouble sleeping, is this weird that, like, when I have trouble sleeping, I can put on Forensic Files and fall asleep within 5 minutes? I don't think I've watched a full case on Forensic Files in about 2 years.
That's a little bizarre. I'm not going to lie to you, buddy.
Yeah. And then I have, like, really weird dreams of my wife wanting to kill me, or you trying to poison my brownie, or, you know, something horrific. So maybe it isn't a good idea to go to bed with true crime.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, here's kind of a funny, weird aside, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as my mom's in hospice care a couple years back, and she loves those true crime shows. So we had the True Crime Channel on, and the hospice care worker comes in and he goes, "Hey, I have to ask you to change a channel." And, like, me and my dad look at each other like, are they about to tell your story, right? Is this guy in hiding?
Yeah.
And I go, why? And he goes, well, it's going to sound weird, but, you know, in these last days, they're in and out of consciousness. They're on some pretty good medication. He goes, I've had people with this on in the background that start running out of the room screaming that we're trying to kill them. Or, you know, somebody's trying to kill them, and they can't tell the difference between reality and fantasy as this thing progresses.
Oh, no.
So he looks at us and he goes, you know, just find some, does she like anything else? And I said, well, she likes the Animal Channel, Animal Planet. And he goes, well, that'll be much better. So my dad and I go, okay. So we flip on the Animal Channel, right? Animal Planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was The Monsters Inside Me. And it was all about, like, parasites and horrible things. And my dad and I looked at each other and looked at the TV and then looked at my mom. We both start laughing hysterically. We're like, yeah, so let's not worry about true crime. My mom's going to think she has pythons under her skin or something. But it was interesting because he said, oh, man, he's had at least a dozen people start accusing him of trying to murder them and do things because they're watching these true crime shows as they're fading.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
That's bizarre. I mean,
yes,
I get
it. I should probably stop watching that stuff.
I get the hallucination, and I get how, you know, when you're in that state, when you're about to fall deep under, how you can take what's on the television and incorporate it in your dreams. But trust me, I would never poison you with the brownie, but I would definitely get you with a little bit of X-Lax, to make things
interesting.
That's
why I never eat anything you or anybody else hands to me, Tim.
I'm just kidding. I'd never do that to you.
So, listen, I want to talk about something. You know, a few years ago, there was an interesting news article. I think it was a year or two ago. 6,000 people had been freed from human trafficking by an unlikely source.
Really?
That 70s show, Kelso. Ashton Kutcher, along with his wife Demi Moore, had created a program about helping to stop human trafficking.
Hmm.
And first of all, I guess I was perplexed. I'm like, what the hell? This is a thing in 2017? Human trafficking? Isn't this? This is what, you know, took place in the 1800s, 1900s, early, maybe even 20th century that this was going on. But there's no possible way that people are still being stolen and sold into slavery. And it's boggling to me. And I know I sound like I'm being too naive regarding this, but it was just the overall concept. Yeah, okay, there's going to be a couple weird people out there. There's going to be a couple individuals that would do this, but I didn't realize it was this huge business. And I was thrown by it. And then I started going down that rabbit hole, and we've done a few shows, including the Johnny Gosch story.
Yeah.
That I did not only for True Crime Tuesday, but I brought over and did on Coast to Coast, and actually got Johnny Gosch's mom to join us. And I was enlightened much more. Now, again, when his story took place, I might have been more predisposed to believe that this is happening. But, you know, as I've got teenage daughters, and I start reading these articles around the holidays of people warning, don't let your young daughters, even your wives, just, you know, always keep an eye on them at these public places like malls. And I'm like, it's a mall. Who's going to kidnap somebody at a mall? Well, what they do is they follow girls into the bathrooms, or young men, and they'll drug them while they're in the bathroom, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And then carry them, oh, she's really sick, and they'll get them to the car and take off with them. So it absolutely floored me. And I've been going down the rabbit holes, but once in a while, this is the kind of story that really gets into my head. So I'm very cautious with it, but I wanted to get a better understanding of exactly what is going on. How prevalent is this really? Is it just a few rare instances of these kidnappings that are being parlayed into something much bigger and much more nefarious? So I went to one of our favorite guests, Tim, and he has a brand new book out called In Chains, The Dangerous World of Human Trafficking. Alan Warren is back with us again. Alan is one of our favorite guests on the show and appears with us regularly with amazing crimes that he's uncovered and new twists to stories that we may have heard before. Alan, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
I've got to ask you, in researching a book like this compared to true crime books in the normal sense, you know, your Ted Bundy's and Richard Speck's and John Gacy's and, you know, these serial killer aspects, how much harder was it to research and uncover the stories for this book?
Quite a bit harder when you're talking to people, because a lot of people don't want to talk about it. You know, it's really an embarrassing subject for them, and it's kind of it's not their fault. But the parents, the families, and quite a few of the stories, it's not just quite as you said. It's even further. It's fathers selling their daughters. Mm-hmm. It's family members giving away children to trafficking. So it gets pretty deep.
And then there's these stories, Alan, and I wish I could remember what the name of the newspaper was, but there was a pretty prominent, and I guess I shouldn't use the word newspaper, but there was a pretty prominent, like, circular that was going out every month that they were using sex trafficking in the ads. And it was covertly hidden, and it was just like it was hidden in plain sight. And they were doing their best to shut these things down and the advertising down, and there's a documentary about this. And it was really chilling to me to hear how this was just allowed to occur. And even when they approached the powers to be that ran these papers, they Cavalier just kind of washed it away. Like, hey, this isn't our problem. We just sell ad spaces. You can't blame us for what people are doing out there. They took no responsibility knowing what these people were doing, and they were taking this blood money. And that really shook me to my core. Do you know which paper I'm referring to by any chance, Alan?
Well, the largest one was Backpage.
That's it. Backpage. Yes.
But I'll tell you, it's true. Backpage and even Craigslist had a ton of them. But the FBI themselves are a little bit more upset that Backpage is gone rather than it's there. Backpage was a great source for them to find people. And it was a great source for them to find who to arrest. When they took down Backpage and the adult part of Craigslist, it kind of spread all over the internet. There's no single location now. It's spread in several places, so it's made their job much harder.
Boy, I guess I didn't even think of that. Sometimes it's better to have the enemy in front of you so you know how to source it than it is for it to go even deeper and darker undercover. But on the other side, then, if there's not the constant awareness of it and it's not readily available to people, right? There's a difference between going to Backpage and finding this than there is in searching it out on the internet, leaving a digital footprint that could be used against you later.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, they're having a lot more difficulty, and the research process is daily now, and it takes a lot more effort. You know, instead of just going to the same couple of sources, they're going to hundreds of sources per day, and then they have to track them, and it's not as easy to find the people they're looking for. Before, they could just go on and find people, pictures and sources, and pretend to rent people or buy them. And it was an easier setup. Now it's a lot more work, and it's more time taking.
There's actually, and this was kind of interesting too, and I've done some of this in the past. There is an app that was released called Traffic Cam, which enables travelers to help law enforcement track down sex traffickers. And how do you do it? You take pictures of your hotel room. That's as simple as it is. Human traffickers commonly advertise children for sex using explicit pictures taken from inside hotel rooms. And the new app, the Traffic Cam, enables travelers to help law enforcement track down traffickers by submitting pictures of hotel rooms around the world that can be matched against a national database that's used by police. The idea for the app is originated with researchers at Washington University in the Exchange Initiative, which is a nonprofit formed by NICS Conference and Meeting Management. After police sought the help of NICS staff to identify the specific hotel where a victim was trafficked, it was a photo that they had from the internet. NICS principal Molly Hackett said, one of the girls in our office knew exactly what it was. Traffic Cam has built a database over 1.5 million images of hotel rooms across the world that police can query to determine where pictures of trafficking victims might have been taken. Thanks to photographs submitted by travelers, the police can upload an image to the app and compare it against photographs uploaded by the traveling public. Then use that information to narrow down a list of possible locations where the trafficker took the picture of the child being sold for sex. So you just enter your hotel room, you enter your room number, you take four pictures, and you submit them to the website. That's what Washington University researcher and Traffic Cam developer Abby Stanilau said. And then those become part of the pipeline that law enforcement can use to track down where victims are being trafficked. Carol Smolinski, executive director of ECPAT USA, the American offshoot of an international nonprofit dedicated to ending sexual exploitation of children, said kids are often bought and sold in hotel rooms, from high ends to budget motels. The takeaway is that it's a phenomenon in the United States, and most people don't think that's true. They think it's happening somewhere else, she said. The whole industry is off the streets, so that those transactions have to happen someplace. Very frequently, they happen in hotel rooms. The app was launched on the 20th of June in 2016. Already had been downloaded more than 56,000 times. Hackett estimated that it's receiving around 1,700 new submissions a day from hotel goers. So that was a great tool to find out existed. And again, isn't it interesting the way that they are using when something like Backpage is taken away from them and Craigslist sexual ads are being taken away from them, they're starting to find more interesting ways to track this down and locate which hotels and hotel rooms may be being used in these cases.
Well, I think it's all good. It's a positive step, and people need to be on board to try and regulate this and try to stop it from happening. Possibly the biggest problem is people are unaware, such as how you were a couple of years ago when you heard about Ashton Kutcher and that little thing. For me, it was the same way. When RJ came to me with the idea of doing this, I was thinking, well, okay, is there really a lot of that going on here? And I think that's going to be a major problem in letting people really understand this and get them on board, because that is the largest, most common thing that people say.
Right. Well, this is happening in Mexico or Brazil or Vietnam. It's not happening in the United States. This isn't a thing. I mean, sure, there's going to be a couple one-offs, but there's no way this is happening. And it is. To what level is this going on, Alan, in the United States?
Right now, the U.S., including Canada, is at about $150 billion a year generated from just actually forced labor alone. So we're leaving out one other category, which it's really hard to capture the exact amount of money. But that is the organ trafficking, and that's huge. And the United States is the largest market for buying body parts, from other people in other countries.
Wait, say that again.
Organ trafficking is a reality, and it's the largest and the fastest growing part of trafficking in the world. And the people, one of the biggest demands, people buying these organs, is the United States. And in fact, it's by far the largest. God, how can I compare it? You can take the rest of the world and double it, and it still doesn't come close to how much is being bought in the U.S. alone.
All right. Now, this I need explained to me, because, again, my feeble brain just can't handle this thought. So once they purchase body organs, where are they going? I mean, reputable hospitals can't be buying trafficked body organs, right? I mean, there's got to be some kind of provenance of where it comes from and how people are getting access to these body parts. What's going on?
No, that's what I thought. And, you know, okay, for example, in 2010, that's the last year that we actually have numbers, the black market, there were 11,000 organs obtained in 2010 alone. And you say about the reputable hospitals, well, no, they're just as involved. The FBI just took down quite a few, like six hospitals. And what's going on is they're privatized, and they have what they call organ brokers. So there's a huge waiting list to buy a body part. You need a liver, you need something, you need, and there's a big list for this. And these brokers supply these privatized doctors in hospitals with these body parts, and they're always for the wealthy. We're not talking about you and I. We walk in the hospital, we get put on the waiting list, where what they say 25 people a day die waiting on that list. But someone with a good amount of wealth goes to a private hospital with these privatized doctors, and they have brokers, and they pay really good money for these body parts. And we're talking about everything from eyes to liver to heart, you name it, spleen. A pair of eyes right now goes for $1,500 in the black market, which is nothing. You know, the heart is $120,000 American right now, and a liver is $160,000. And so, rather than wait on a list, it's become very complex, this whole organization of doing body parts. And again, the richer countries are the ones that are the biggest buyers.
I mean, it's beyond words to me that this is taking place. I guess money talks, and at what cost? These aren't, and just so people understand, Alan, how are those body parts being collected? Are they from people that have been in car accidents or died of other natural causes, and those are undiseased parts of the body?
Well, there's three main ways. One is just the most popular is the purchase. There's a large cash payout for the desired organ. So, basically someone selling their parts. And there's a lot of brokers that come out and buy them. And it's a lot of countries that haven't deemed it illegal. So in some countries, you've got tons of people just selling their body parts for a lot of money. So that's one. The other one is the forced or coerced one. And I've got several cases in here where people, like students that are away from home in a university somewhere, like in Europe, for instance, there's a few cases here, and they go out to a bar, they meet someone, go home, they're drinking, and then they pass out. Next thing, they wake up in the apartment, and someone's taken a body part from them. This is going on.
That sounds like the old urban legend, right? You go to a hotel with a prostitute or something. You wake up in the morning packed in ice in your bathtub because they've stolen a kidney.
Yeah, but this is really going on a lot. I mean, tons. And then the third one, which is the worst, I don't know, you can't even call it worse because they're all bad, but is the trickery. And some people... get this, they go into a hospital or go into a clinic and they're being treated for a particular thing, condition or sickness. And next thing they know, they're told that they need to have something removed because it's causing them, you know, it's going to kill them. So they actually take the body organ from them without them realizing, that it's to be sold. There's nothing wrong with that organ that they're taking out of them, but they're told that there is. And so it's this is the craziest part and the fastest growing, and it's definitely the most complex, and it's just amazing how developed this system has come with selling organs and body parts. It's crazy, and the stories in the book will freak you out, because some of them are just, they're just normal, like British people, Americans, Canadians, living a normal life, doing something, and all of a sudden, one of these systems has taken away a body part.
Could you share one or two of those stories with us?
Well, you know, probably the worst one I found was probably the 24-year-old British student, and he went to what was the country, like Yugoslavia or something, and he was studying some particular science that they specialized in that country. And what happened was he was one of the guys that had met a girl and thought things were going great, dated her a few times, and one of those nights he passed out with her. The next day, when he woke up, he was in a great deal of pain, and he had all these scars and cuts that had been sewn up throughout his body and all around his stomach and lower intestine. And it was in Georgia. That's where the country, Georgia. And he was a 24-year-old. And so he had several of his organs that were taken out. And the problem is, when he went to that country to the authorities, they really did nothing about it. He went back home, and even the police report that they filed was it was nothing. They didn't try to go after the people. They didn't even research it. You know, they didn't investigate. It was really
to what end? What was their purpose? You know, there has to be some in a report, especially something officially documented, why they decided that this was not worthy of further investigation. Was it just, oh, this is so few and far between, you know, there's nothing for us to do, or we're so overwhelmed by these demands, this is just another one to throw on top of the pile?
Well, you know, now his particular legal firm believes that they're sort of involved in the whole money scheme in Georgia, for instance. And the reason they said that was because, again, in 2014, a man named Ryan Singleton, who was 24, and the same thing happened to him, but his body, when it was discovered, it was missing his eyes, his heart, his lungs, liver, and kidney. So, you know, and they, the authorities said that an animal probably took those parts from the body. But the problem was, the body was never torn apart. The body was, it had been operated. People had taken those body parts out. This was cut and removed. This is not, it's just crazy. So you get a lot of these things that happen, and for some reason, the local authorities are not really supportive of the families that come from other countries. And I'm not trying to scare people and say, oh, don't go anywhere. It's just very questionable why they don't take it more seriously.
Again, I'm sorry to be so stupefied by this, Alan. It's mind numbing to hear these reports, and that they're just passed over summarily. And this is going on. Oh, it was probably animals that removed him. What, a raccoon opened the body up so that his buddies could go in and eat the parts they wanted? You know, I mean, it's so ridiculous that this is just kind of the mindset. And like you said, I guess they're part of this trade, right? It makes you have to be very concerned about where you go, and you've got to take care of yourself, because you certainly don't want to end up in a hospital in one of these countries that, you know, could be a part of the scam to begin with.
Yeah, you know, it's a whole new way of try. You have to be aware of your surroundings and the people around you, and really understand that there's things going on like this that are different. It's just a different type of act against humans that we have to be aware of. It's not just being mugged or the common things. There's something else going on now, and because as the demand goes up and the money's there, these bad people will just do these things. It's just a different way of theft and making money. But it's going on in the U.S. as well. We have cases listed in here too that we found in, like, even in 2015, and these are things you don't really hear about. Nicholas Rodriguez, who was a 24-year-old, and he was actually a state prisoner. He went missing for 15 hours. He was found in a garbage can with his body cut in half, and his organs were all taken. So this is happening in the U.S. as well. It's not just a foreign country that it's going on. It's happening everywhere.
How big a surprise was uncovering this to you?
Oh, huge. Huge. Like I said, when RJ came to me about it, and I was like, well, okay, it's maybe interesting. It took me a year to really get myself into gear for this, because I kept researching and hearing little things, but I was kind of like, well, you know, it's okay. And then I jumped into it by meeting a few people, and then you start getting into the different levels. The worst part was some of the people in the States that you meet, because they're just common people. Teenage girls are probably the ones that are most at risk right now in the U.S. You got 14, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds. And how it's done here is they meet a guy. They think he's the best thing since sliced bread. You know, they're totally in love. And this guy is really kind of grooming her, and eventually talks her into moving out of home and moving in with him. And as soon as that happens, they take the girl and they ship her to another city where there's other people such as himself. It's like a network. And they force them into prostitution, mainly prostitution. Sometimes it's labor. That tends to be more the male that gets forced into labor. But sometimes it's other work, physical work. And they get their ID taken, hair changed, their colors of their hair. They totally capture these people and ship them to different cities and make them work in whatever business they want. And that was really surprising. And I've got 6 or 7 stories. There were so many stories that I had to try and take each different area of what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then we have survivor stories as well. So it's really, if anything, it was probably the most depressing book I've ever been involved in.
So some of this is taking place through the internet and just preying upon teenage girls that they find vulnerable. And I've got to tell you, I like watching TikTok videos. My daughters showed me the TikTok, and I get a kick out of the humorous aspects and some of the comedic ones that they make. But there are some where you think, well, you know, how can people tell who are vulnerable? There are some, as you're scrolling through, you've got these teenage girls doing this with this maudlin music in the background, and it's like, get to know me, and they hold up these little signs that say, I'm broken. I feel like nobody loves me. I'm all alone. So you can see they're putting themselves right into the crosshairs of these predators, because they're the ones that right then they start contacting them and oh my God, you're so beautiful. You shouldn't be that way. And oh, you're amazing. And you're so funny. And playing that up where they're feeding this hunger that this person has to be acknowledged and recognized and loved. And if they're providing them with pictures of an attractive person claiming it's them, whether it is or not, they're leading these girls and boys right down this path of destruction. And it's we're setting them up. We're letting them in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that is probably the worst thing. You know, people on Instagram or Facebook and kids put things like that, and they set themselves up. They don't realize. The kids are incredible at working technology, but they don't have the experience.
Or the emotional maturity to realize that, though in that moment they're being vulnerable, which is beautiful, that you're willing to expose your soul in a way. Because here's what we tell, right? Don't hold it in. If you're feeling lost and despondent, share it with somebody. Get the help. And you're getting the admiration and you're getting the love from people that don't even know you. And that's got to be very fulfilling. And then you don't realize that amongst them, amongst the you know, sheep that are braying about your beauty and intelligence and sweetness, there are a few wolves that are cloaked and moving amongst them and getting closer to you and feeding that vulnerability. And folks, I hope, if anything, if you have young girls and boys in your life that are on social media constantly, make them sit down with you and listen to this episode. No electronics, nothing to distract. Make them sit down and listen to this episode, because though we can't walk in a steady pace of fear, we also have to educate, and you have to take responsibility, because it's never going to happen to us, right, Alan? Oh, I don't have to worry. This isn't going to happen to my kids until it happens to your kids.
Yeah, and that's probably, again, it's the awareness. The biggest issue with this whole crime is we're living in a dream world. We're totally unaware that this is going on. And most of us think that way until it happens to someone in our family. And another problem is a lot of people, it's unfortunate, there's a lot of broken families, and a lot of teenagers just run away. And parents, you know, right away think that they're, you know, just ran away with their friends, and sometimes they never come back. And sometimes we think they're, you know, in trouble. And sometimes there's a lot of parents that don't care. You know, it's really quite depressing. That's why I said this book was, it's really a hard one to work through. Meeting people and seeing all of the different types of enslavement there is going on, and how unaware everybody is. Everybody's just so surprised, like it's not happening.
and something, Alan, maybe you can talk about as well, right? Because again, I hope that if you have a daughter or son, granddaughter, grandson, nephew, niece, godchild, whatever, that you sit them down and talk about this and maybe play this episode, because there are some aspects that need to be examined. And the fact that you think, well, there's no way I would just do this. And you hear some of these stories and they're like, you mean there's nobody even policing them? They're just at an apartment during the day? Well, I would have run away. I would have done this. But what they do, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Alan, in most cases, once they've abducted you, they've put you into compromising sexual positions and photographed, videotaped. They've gotten you addicted to very hardcore drugs. They may have even had you commit a major felony, or perhaps even be a trigger person in a murder. So they've got so much on you that you're never going to walk, because fine, go ahead. You take off and run and tattle, because I've got all the videos of you doing these horrible things and you shooting that person or you shooting up another child with drugs. And they incorporate, they involve these children in a way that makes them an accessory, and they manipulate these children to believe that there is no escape.
All of that is true, and even more. There's stories in here. You'll meet people that were beaten by even not pleasing one of the customers, chained into the room. In some of these cases, there's 4 to 15 girls living in one room, and it's just the other one too, with the younger teenagers taken from suburbs, they get told that they're going to kill their family, they're going to kill their parents, their siblings, or whoever. There's so many different ways of holding a person against their will, and there's probably about a dozen stories that of people that were, it was just, it, you know, it, it, some of them were beaten so badly. And it's just crazy what's going on in this country right now. And it's not even on anybody's mind. You put out a book like this and you get, gain some attention, but people are so, you know, looking at what's going on with politics and everything else that it's barely even mentioned on our news cycles here. You'll hear about missing people for a short time, you know, but they don't get into this whole dreadful situation going on.
It's important then to educate your children that in the event that, God forbid, they ever find themselves in this position and something happens, that there is an escape and you are not manipulated. Most of the time, well, I've got to guess 99% of the time, these people are cowards. You make a break for it, they're never going to come hunt you and your family down because it's not worth it to them to get caught when they can just go take another child. You may have done things. You may have been forced to do horrible things. They're going to take that into account. And if you break free, you may be able to stop that cycle. You may be able to stop these perpetrators from doing what's being done to other children or other people. And it's an important aspect that, again, some of this is very tough conversations to have with children and teenagers, but it's something we need to educate ourselves for, right? You have to know the dangers. You don't let your kids just walk up and put their hands on fire. You don't let them just walk over broken glass without a warning. You don't just let them dive into water without knowing the dangers of it. We have aspects as well. And Alan, do you have any concept? I mean, what's the right age to start talking to your children about this? Is it the age that they become indoctrinated to social media? Is that when we need to start giving them the warning?
Yeah, you have to. And it's younger and younger because as soon as they are on social media of any type, as soon as they have access to the internet or a phone or anything like that, they have to be told about this situation. And they also have to be told it's not just the girls, it's the boys who are taking, it's about a 30% of the people trafficked are boys as well. So that's a huge number. So don't just think about your young girls, think about your young boys as well. So it's a misconception, that people think, oh, just the girls. And there's also, a lot of people that think that it's just sex or prostitution that they're using them for, and it's not. There are a ton of farms and construction that they use boys on, teenage boys particularly, to do these because the workloads are hard for a lot of girls on average. So this goes on as well, and it's a huge amount of growth in this area. It's not slowing down. It's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
It's even getting with far
all
worse.
Of even with all of the spotlight and attention turned on it, it's getting worse. You're not seeing any diminishment?
No, not at all. Not at all. And in fact, the standards, even with even the World Health Organization has put it at growing at about 70% per year overall in trafficking in the different areas. So it's not slowing down. We're not getting a grasp on this. And the reason is because North America, especially North America, is not aware, or it's turning a blind eye. They're not paying attention to this problem. Like I said, they're focused on all this other stuff. And nobody's really focused on this in the family level. And that's where we're losing, you know.
Why isn't this covered by mainstream media in a much bigger light?
You deal with a lot of the shows with Supernatural. There's a lot of people that think it's a, you know, mainstream's controlled by the deep state and, you know, all this stuff. And it's all political. I have no idea if it's just incompetence, if it's just because media, the networks feel they have to go for the political thing because that's what people are watching. I have no idea why, but you can hardly break in with these kinds of stories in any network. Very little of it is covered. And
do you think that's got to be a big reason why it's continuing to grow? We're not educating enough people about this?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You look at in each category, we just don't think about it. You know, we think our kids, and some, like I said, people don't care if they lose their kids. Look at all the homeless kids. There's others that the boyfriend takes them away. There's all these issues that nothing goes on. Then there's the organ trafficking. Same thing. It's the wealthy buying it. It's out of sight, out of mind. Labor trafficking's the same. There's idea. There's things to watch for. Like we give points of according to what the World Health Organization says, the kind of the key things to look for when you're at a restaurant or if you're in a spa or if you see something out of sorts at a farm or construction site and things like that. But it's just like you just can't seem to get people's attention on this subject unless it actually involves them directly. And it's a really uphill battle. But that's sort of what got me into doing the book as much as I did. And that's what really got me into the stories, because you just keep finding more and more and more. And it just grabs you, and you don't realize how bad it is and how worse it's getting and how nobody's really doing anything about it. And if you want to go to that area, it's even worse, because the prosecution rate is terrible on traffickers. It's somewhere around 23% right now in the U.S.
How is that possible? If they're busted for trafficking, how can it be that miserable of a stat?
Well, according to a couple of the different prosecuting teams that we talked to, the problem was actually getting testimony from witnesses and people being trafficked. It's the hardest thing to do, especially when so much of it is from people taken from other countries and they're sent back. So that's one issue. The other one is underage young people that don't want to get involved. It's that's what I'm told by prosecution. I'm not sure if it's really quite that way or if it's about a money thing. I'm sort of lost in between. It seems like a lot of prosecutors would rather just settle out of court for a fine or a fee of some sort. And very little, there's very little of it actually being stopped. It's starting to happen.
A fine
now.
Or a fee. How do you put a price on human life? And I know this isn't a question directly to you, Alan, because we're not in this, but I'm just saying this. How do we? Oh, yeah. All right. Well, you've been caught, Alan. And you know what? I want $25,000 and a promise this won't happen again. How is that even a possibility? I mean, drawing that line of where it's, you know, what is the acceptable punishment? If somebody is imprisoning others, stealing their lives, humiliating and manipulating them, there should be no light of day for the people that are caught. If they're proven guilty, it shouldn't be a slap on the wrist and a fine. Listen, there are guys in jail for marijuana possession that have been rotting for 10 and 15 years because they were selling marijuana. And these traffickers, human traffickers, are getting out on fines?
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, you know, where you're located, just look at that one just in Minneapolis there. This was a sex ring that they say is one of the largest ever. And it's like, well, you know, there's probably a lot larger, but it's just that they find so few. And they arrested 36 people that were part of this. And this is a massive international sex ring. And we're talking about bringing people from Thailand into Minneapolis and other cities. They had five other cities and they were trafficking. The federal government finally took this down, and we're talking of the 36, there's only five that they pursued prosecution with, five of the traffickers, and only two will serve any time in jail, and it will be 10-year sentences. With time served waiting for the trial of 2 years and you know, good behavior or whatever they work it, they'll get out in another 2 or 3 years. The other three just had a fine, a large fine, but it's not really doing anything. And again, you get to the girls that were all trafficked from places like the Philippines and Thailand and all these other countries. They get put into detention. And then they get a fine and prosecute it for their part in it, even though they were held and taken here for a different reason than they were told. And most of them get sent back. Our immigration has a special visa for people that were trafficked and used in that setup that you can apply for. But most that even apply don't get it. It's almost impossible to get that E-visa, they call it. You almost can't get it. And so they end up going back home with a record, and they're totally, their reputation, whatever it was, is totally gone because they were arrested and deported for prostitution, according to what the people in their country hear. So the bottom line is the people that really are behind it are not really, they're not really getting taken down like they should be.
Here's something really unnerving, right? And Tim.
Yep.
This can happen. This happens everywhere, but not here. This doesn't happen in our backyard, right? We're Minnesota nice. Here's something weird, Alan. This article that came out a while back, a 33-year-old man in town for the Super Bowl is accused of trying to hire what he believed were two teenage siblings for sex. Justin Beard of Branson, Missouri, is charged with two counts of felony prostitution, court documents filed in Hennepin County. If convicted, each count carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison and/or a $20,000 fine. According to a criminal complaint, Beard was in town to work Super Bowl live festivities this week and responded to a Craigslist ad, which police posted as part of a sting operation. An undercover officer posed as a man selling his 15-year-old daughter and 13-year-old son for oral sex. Beard exchanged messages with the officer and offered his Super Bowl live VIP tickets as payment, claiming that they were each worth $100. Beard agreed to meet Tuesday night at a Minnetonka apartment, the complaint states. He knocked the door, met police officers, and quickly found himself in handcuffs. His bail was set at $125,000. So this guy, first of all, if he's found guilty, 10 years in prison per sentence plus a $20,000 fine for a total of $40,000 fine and maybe 20 years imprisonment for trying to solicit sex with minors. And I'm going to guess this isn't the first time Justin Beard of Branson, Missouri has made that call. And this is just the first time he got caught. So that's terrifying. This is a news story, Alan. I don't know if you know about this one. This is straight from the Minnesota headlines here. And this is just within the last 4 days. And Tim, I don't know if you've been following this. Minnesota man charged with running sex trafficking ring from behind bars. A Brooklyn Park, Minnesota man is accused of running sex trafficking operations at hotels in Woodbury and Brooklyn Center while incarcerated in a county jail cell. Daniel David Ellington, 38, was charged in Washington County on two counts of sex trafficking, two counts of promotion of prostitution, according to a news release Thursday, May 16th, from the county attorney, Pete Orput. According to the news release, the East Metro Sex Trafficking Task Force investigated a commercial sex operation at an unnamed Woodbury hotel and recovered a victim of trafficking. An examination of cellular phone data led detectives to Ellington, who authorities allege advised, organized, promoted, and profited from the prostitution of a victim in Woodbury, all while incarcerated on unrelated charges in Kennebec County Jail, north of the Twin Cities. The investigation also allegedly uncovered other sex trafficking operations connected to Ellington. An investigation into additional trafficking victims is pending, the release says. The case is evidence that traffickers, even behind bars, control and manipulate their victims, Orput said in a statement. Our office will continue to work with law enforcement to investigate and aggressively prosecute these cases. Tim, you've got young relatives.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a gut punch is that to read this is taking place right in our backyard?
I'm pretty shocked. I you know, especially since there was a I'm trying to remember the name of the magazine that came out, and we've been touting it on our local newscast the last day or two that Minnesota is like the number three state in the union as far as standard of living. And that's all they've been talking about on the newscast, especially last night. We're number three in the nation as far as standard of living and what a great place this is to live. And it's such a great place and blah, blah, blah. And you would think that this was a utopia in Minnesota. Not that it's a pit by any means, but that story in itself shocks me, that you could be behind bars and still yet run a criminal organization, a trafficking organization, is quite shocking.
Well, and it's right here in our backyard. And maybe you need to do this, folks. It doesn't happen to me. Do yourself a favor and just Google human trafficking in your state and see how prevalent it is, how many of these stories are popping up, and what is going on. It's ridiculous. Tim, I'm looking in here. I don't remember these cases being covered in the news going back to 2012, 2013, 2017, 2018, 2016. These stories, 2010. It's Minnesota arrests 58 in a child sting during the NCAA Final Four. This was on April 10th, 2019. Tim, this was last month. Reuters reported this. Do you remember this in the headlines?
No, and a lot of times and I'm sure Alan will chime in on this too, a lot of times with sex trafficking stories, they get swept to the side very quickly, especially around major events like Super Bowl, Final Four, because the cities in question, especially like with the city of Minneapolis, they don't want that out there because they are trying to attract bigger events more frequently. Nobody wants bad PR for their city. And there are bigger, quote unquote, bigger stories out there that they want to cover for a longer amount of time. We've had other stories as well in the media here, having to do with police shootings and other shootings and trials. And of course, those sex trafficking stories get swept to the side in favor of these court trials that have been going on for and settlements. Of course, we had a cop that shot a blonde woman who that story went on for, I think, 2 weeks. And we had another shooting that in trial that went on for a couple of weeks. So those dominated the headlines. And
children are our most vulnerable commodity. I mean, they're the most vulnerable aspect of our society. And Alan, this is part of the article. This blows me away. This was just under a month ago. A total of 58 suspects were taken into custody. 28 victims, including one minor, were rescued from trafficking situations right here in Minnesota in one day. 28 victims have been rescued. And I'm not beating up local media. Maybe I missed the story. Maybe I just didn't happen to see it that day. But you would think that there would have been a much bigger push to let people know that this is going on. Can it really be what Tim is saying? We're hiding it because we don't want to mess up tourism. We don't want to mess up the sites to have them considered for future relevant, large sporting events. So let's just hide the dirty underbelly.
Yeah, because, you don't want, you have events, you want tourism, and you don't want to talk about this sort of thing. And I think that's probably a really good point. And according to let's see, the national, like from your, what is that called? UNDOC, which is the, it's done in the world. It's the report for trafficking. It's a global report. And for example, within America, you had 1,513 people that were charged, indicted for trafficking. and there were only 946 convictions. So just over half of the people that actually get charged with doing this sort of thing get convicted. There was 8,821 people rescued from this in the United States alone.
Say that again. There were
8,821 people rescued from being trafficked, just victims, last year alone. This is most of the cases, again, like I said, they're not being convicted because there's, when you say, running from behind prison, one of the biggest problems is that witnesses are threatened by the traffickers or their associates. So even if they're in prison, it's a network of people. They come to your home, they threaten you, they threaten your family. Most of these people will not testify or they go into hiding. So you get 900 convictions out of 1,500 traffickers. So, you got really good odds running this sort of a thing. It's not getting better. I have not seen any relief in sight, and I'm not seeing any because I don't see any changes in the media with people's attitudes toward it. And I don't know why, because as I got into it, I got more and more upset and more involved in this. And I kind of thought, well, this is crazy. It's really upsetting. And getting people on board with this seems to be like pulling teeth. And I don't know what it's going to take.
Well, and then here you do get a high-profile case, right? The Minnesota sting came less than 2 months after New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft was charged with soliciting sex as part of an investigation into sex trafficking at several Florida day spas. Kraft, who has pleaded not guilty, was one of 25 men who were taken into custody in the sting. So you've got Kraft suddenly grabbing the headlines for this, and he's pleading not guilty. And on top of that, they're actually considering not using some of the video and things that would put this man away. So his power and money, first of all, was utilized to have underage people do sexual things for him in this sting. And then the money is hiding this and fighting this as well. And we wonder why this isn't out there. According to this article, more than 5,100 cases of human trafficking were reported to the National Human Trafficking Hotline in 2018. That amounted to 40% fewer cases than the 8,500 reported in 2017, which was a five-year high, the organization said. But 5,100 cases of human trafficking were reported. How many went without reporting then? Because people don't know how to look for it or what to look for it. It's so strange.
It's crazy. And people like Kraft, he will not even have to appear in court because he doesn't live in Florida. He'll get a fine. The tape will probably never be released. He's got good legal representation. His fine will be very small. $500 to $1,000 at max. And it's only because of the high profile case and it made the media, but it takes that to make the media. It's because of who he is and not because of what he did. And again, like I said, the rest, and I don't want, and this was really hard because I didn't want to get political, but this is the same. This owner of this spa will get a $2,000 fine. She has 20 other spas. She was selling tours to the White House and to meet Donald Trump and had all these pictures and a website as well. And it all went down after this arrest. But she's going to continue to make money doing this kind of work. And the people that are hurt are all the people that were arrested, that were carrying out these sex acts, that were brought over to this country from China, being told that they were going to get a working visa and a green card and a place to live, and you got a great place to make money and a job in a spa. They get thrown into a room with 10 other girls with a hot plate, and they have to do all this, these sexual activities. All of the money they worked for was to pay off for their being brought here. So they have this huge expense of, well, you owe us 50 grand because we brought you here and give you a place to live. So you have to work that off first. And our justice system at the moment, at the end of the day, those girls get sent home with a record and everybody else goes normal. Everybody else's life continues.
It's disturbing, to say the least.
Oh, it's terrible.
In Chains, The Dangerous World of Human Trafficking. That's the book we're talking about. Alan Warren, one of the authors on this book. Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say, what they've done is the Human Trafficking Prevention Month is now January's, and they do a blue campaign. So we're all supposed to wear blue and in the U.S. to bring awareness to the human trafficking. And that's why the cover on the book is blue. Just, you know, little sideline.
Well, that's great, and I appreciate you doing that. I just, you know, some of these things seem so silly. Let's all wear blue on this day. Most people don't even know why you're doing it. And it's like, how about instead of us all wearing blue, we all meet in front of the Capitol and demand changes?
Yeah. You know, you're right, totally.
Blue is great, but I wouldn't know that from any other color because, is blue us standing up for human trafficking? Is blue us standing up for police? Is blue standing for we wish the Jazz and Blues Festival would come to Minneapolis? There's so many causes where let's wear this color or do this or wear this ribbon that I don't think people personally, I just don't think people give a shit anymore, Alan. It's got to be something bigger and more broad that people are going to start taking notice of. And when are we going to put our foot down and start protecting our people, our children, and make sure that Congress and law is behind us on this and not in a passive way? Now, you could say, well, listen, they're doing all these stings in the states during this time. Great. We're taking 33 people off the streets or 150 people off the streets. Or in the case of Atlanta during the Super Bowl, they arrested 169 perpetrators. Great. That is a mere drop in the bucket from what exists out there. What can we do to start educating? And man, this is the stuff that needs to start being spoken about in schools. Right. I mean, let's stop worrying about how to make the perfect goddamn omelet and let's start talking about ways to protect yourself and social media etiquette so that people realize there are real inherent dangers to these things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm with you all the way. I'm just giving the information. I don't know. I'm with you. I don't know. I think a lot of people are probably not feeling confident in the government doing any sort of anything real to get this taken care of. And it's definitely out of grasp. We're so far into this sort of problem and they've done so little and it's growing so large. You know, it's amazing. And when you go through the book, you just about, it gets you more and more involved and it gets you more and more frustrated because you can't believe that this is going on. And we have so much power to stop something like this, but it just doesn't seem to be going there. And I got to mention chapter 19, we have the tattoo you chapter and they actually are putting tattoos on their trafficked people. Like there's people.
So it's like
recovered.
Cattle ranch branding.
Yes. They've recovered people from in the U.S. in these raids. And this is according to Homeland Security. And they've got people, and these are kids, and they've been tattooed with what looks like a barcode, just sort of like what we've imaged on the front cover. And I've got pictures of it in there. You can see it on girls' arms, their shoulders, their hands. They've actually been tattooed. They're being counted and scanned. It's just, these are people. These are young children. These are people that are being used as a product. It's just like I said, it's a very, very upsetting topic. This is worse than I'd have done a dozen true murder serial killer books, and this has been the most impact I've ever felt from anything I've ever done. It's crazy, and this is the one I least thought about before I got involved in it. So. It's It's a deep subject, and it needs to be. And that's why, you know, and for your listeners, I want people to get the book, and I want it out there. And I want to give away 24 books. For the first 24 emails I get at radiocub@gmail.com, and that's with two Bs, so radio, C-U-B-B, I'll give you a free book. And I want people to just tell other people, give it to other people, and pass on the information. It's so important right now.
Radio Cub, radiocubb@gmail.com. First 24 people to send an email to Alan Warren. Tell him you heard about it on our show, and he will get you a copy of the book. But please do share the word, share this episode, and let people know the importance of this and share it. It's going to be a hard moment, but you have to share it with your kids and share it with family members, because nobody is immune from this vulnerability.
Yeah, it's sad because we have to kind of break the innocence of our children at an early age. You know, it's something you don't really want to sit down with a 12-year-old and start explaining, because I find it hard to understand as a 57-year-old. I'm just in shock of what people do to other people. And I can't imagine sitting down with your child, but it's got to be done. It's not an easy subject, but it's very important.
It has to be done. It's required, because we're in a different world. And you know what's really sad and sickening is you have these Instagram accounts, you have these TikTok videos, you've got whatever other myriad of social media I'm not even familiar with. And basically, you're creating a buffet menu for these psychopaths, because they see you. They see you exposing yourself. Maybe you're not completely naked, but you're scantily clad, thinking you're being cool, cute, sexy, whatever. And then you might be showing what school you're attending because you're wearing a sweatshirt or a t-shirt or a cheerleader outfit. You're telegraphing personal information about yourself that if these guys want, and they know they've got a client willing to pay for this, that, or the other, and they locate you, you put yourself on the menu. I mean, is that a fair assessment? Yeah,
it's worse than that, because you like how you mentioned the mall. You see, because you know, they go to the mall, they check in, they're at the mall, they're at this store, they're at this restaurant, they're eating at Red Robin, having a burger.
You're right.
They totally expose it. So, and it's so easy. Like, these people that are set up are college students that had their organs removed or whatever the case. That's how a lot of them are found nowadays. That's, you know, they send people to meet you, and they know where you are. They know what you look like, and they know your situation, you know, and you just kind of, they're giving it all away. And these people are predators, and they're evil. They're looking at ways of getting you. They want to take your kids, and, they have to be aware not to do that. I mean, it's really sad, because it should be fun. Social media and these things, going to the mall with your friends and taking a picture of your dinner, is supposed to be a fun thing. And you know, unfortunately, we're just not in the world. We have to wake up and realize that this is not a thing to be doing. We have to be...
Oh, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to share this with my child, because it's just ridiculous, and I don't need to breed more fear into my kids. Just let them be kids. And then the day comes that your kid is missing, and you're going to kick your ass that you didn't take 5 minutes to talk to them about this and give them information to let them know. Listen, I've had hard conversations with my kids, Alan, and I've told them. And, you know, some people are like, man, you take it overboard. Do I? Do I really? Because... you know, there are stories of these child abductions. My daughters ask, well, what happens, Daddy, if one of us gets grabbed? And I said, the other runs and screams. No, Daddy, I'm going to fight him and grab my sister back. I said, no, you're not. You're going to run as far and fast as you can, because one of you has been taken. Don't make it both of you. And you scream fire. You scream fire. That's what makes people come see, because they don't want their place on fire. You scream fire until people come and then tell them what's happening. You look at the car, you give me the color of the car, anything you can remember from the license plate, that's important, but you run like hell. But that's my best friend, or that's my sister, Daddy. Right. But if you stay there to try to help, you're dead too.
And there's a better chance if you run away and survive that we're going to be able to get your sister or friend back. There's a better chance that you're going to survive. You need to do this. And it's been emblazoned into my kid's mind. And it's sad that it has to be that way. But I love my children. They need to know how important this is. And this is something that could save their life. These are life skills. These are things that are important. And no matter how hard it is to hear, how hard it is to share, you have to make time to do these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm totally supportive of law enforcement and all that. But I think the bottom line is you have to protect yourself and you have to be aware of your surroundings and your kids have to be on board with that. They have to realize that there are bad things out there, bad people, there's dangers, and not saying that, you know, police are not good or anything. It's what it's saying is we have to look out for ourselves. We have to take the first step. The police are there. But, you know,
by the time the police are involved, yeah, it's too late.
It's not enough.
And you need to be understanding and aware of your surroundings. And Jesus, I'm watching some of these videos, Alan, where,
oh, it's terrible.
People are walking on the video or walking on the streets, some dark street by themselves, and they're looking at their phone, and then they're just grabbed and pulled into an alley and beaten, raped, killed, whatever, because they were completely unaware of their situation. If you're out and about, put your goddamn phone away, pay attention to what's going on around you, and look at what's happening. And children, especially you, if you want to take a picture, you stop, you take the picture, you put your phone down until you get where you're going. Don't be just walking with your head on this phone because you won't see them coming up on you. You won't see them coming in front of you. You won't see them as they drag you into an alley, and then it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, the question you have to ask is, what if something does happen? What if someone does grab you? What are you going to do? What if someone is gone missing in your family? People have to really create a plan and think about this logically and be aware and be ready for something like this. And, I'm not trying to be paranoid, but it's going on. It's growing. And the police are trying to catch up to it. But it's they've got their ways behind. This is not something that's going to be resolved quickly. We have to take it into our hands and be aware that there's these things going on here, and the U.S. is not like safe just because you're here and you go to a nice shopping mall and you drive a nice car and you have good friends and all you know all that stuff. That's all great, but it happens here, and a lot.
And here's a scary thing. If you are a person of any color, your story most likely is not going to get the coverage as others would. So you have to be even more cautious and aware. So you don't become a statistic, you become a survivor. That's the way it has to be. And it's horrible that in 2019 we still have to feel that way, but it's the truth.
Yeah, it's a bad situation, and unfortunately, right now, and even in the U.S. with the trafficking, African Americans are 60% of the people being trafficked from the U.S. And that's according to the
How are they getting them out of the country? How do you get them out without identification?
Well, you know, for the most part, what they're doing with Americans being trafficked is they're being trafficked for body parts, and then their bodies are dumped, or they're being trafficked and they get moved to other cities, and they take away their ID and they change their look as much as they can, and then they market them and advertise them in those cities, so that, you know, they take someone from Minneapolis and they move them to Florida. And change their hair color and their name, and they put them out for sale on whatever website or advertisement they have. Now that there's no back page, they use whatever and market them, and that's how it's done. So that's what's going on, and the demand is for 60% African American, and I'm not sure what creates demand for these sex traffickers. I don't know what they look for. And, but I guess they know their business, you know. I feel like I'm talking about retail or something, you know.
Right. It's just like stocks and bonds. You know what to buy and what to trade for.
It's crazy. We're talking about the supply and demand.
Well, Alan, I can't thank you enough for coming on and enlightening the audience and writing a book like this. I know it was no easy task and it was hard on many different levels, but thank you for helping to expose this and get the word out.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
In Chains, The Dangerous World of Human Trafficking. He has 20, what'd you say, 25 copies?
24.
24 copies. Let's not push it. I know. 24 copies available. And what is the email again so that people can reach out to you?
It's radiocub@gmail.com.
RadioCubb@gmail.com. And if you're one of those sitting there thinking, oh, it's probably too late, I shouldn't have. There's a lot of people that sit there and don't make that email and they'll miss out. So get a copy of the book for yourself and email it. And for the rest of you, buy the book. And whether you get the book free or you buy the book, make sure that you go and you rate it so that it gets pushed up in the Amazon ratings and gets seen by more people. That's going to help this as well and help to educate more people. Get the book out there. Do these authors the service of, when you enjoy their radio interview with us and you enjoy the books that they write and the work that they're doing to shed light on a very dark situation, go rate and review their books and get them pushed up in the ratings so that people know about them. Alan, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, Tim, let's try to lighten the mood a little bit now. It's as hard as that is to do. Let's kick open the case files. We've got dumb crimes and stupid criminals.
It's Crayon News story time.
What happened with this dude, Christ Bearer? I heard he cut his penis off and then jumped off a balcony.
Suspect pulls gun from butt, shoots twice at Denver police.
What is your emergency?
I need help.
And what's the problem?
I'm too high.
You're too high?
Yeah.
Well, if ever, Tim, we needed to lighten things up, it's after this episode. Yeah. What a dark story, but again, it has to be spoken about. I hope you guys, it's hard to say enjoyed today's interview, but I hope that you took from today's interview some important information and will seriously think about sitting down with the people that are important in your life and let them know about what's going on. And I don't want it all directed just to children. I'm sure you have vulnerable adults in your life that just don't think and are putting themselves out there and not realizing what they're really doing. They're displaying themselves. They're making themselves easy marks.
That too.
All right. Let's go. Dumb crime, stupid criminals. Fayetteville, Arkansas, Tim. A woman from Arkansas will now spend time behind bars after she posed as a California sheriff to get her boyfriend out of jail. How far would you go for love, Tim? Maxine Feldstein has been sentenced to 15 years in prison after she pleaded guilty to forgery, third-degree escape, and second-degree criminal impersonation, KFSM reported. Feldstein gave fake paperwork to Washington County Detention Center last July. Jailers thought the paperwork was real and released Nicholas Lowe to her custody. Lowe, according to court documents, told Feldstein to pretend she was a deputy from Ventura County Sheriff's Office. That's what KFSM reported. The FSIM, Tim, the FSIM.
Ah, yes.
He told Feldstein to tell Washington County officials California was having issues with overcrowding and all low-priority extraditions have been suspended, court documents stated. Feldstein, who had bonded out of jail hours before, called the Washington County Jail saying she was Ventura County Deputy L. Kershaw. Officials realized 2 days later that they'd been duped when a real Ventura County deputy clerk called to pick up Lowe. Law enforcement arrested the couple about a month later. Lowe also pled guilty to third-degree escape and was sentenced to 1 year in prison, but is given credits for 167 days served. He will have a five-year suspended sentence once he's released by the Arkansas Department of Correction. So, for love, Tim, for love, this chucklehead, right?
Yep.
He's going to have a five-year suspended sentence.
Okay.
He's given 1 year in prison, but he's already served 167 days, so he's only got two-thirds of a year left to go in this stupid-ass escape plot. And his girlfriend will now spend 15 years in prison.
Somehow,
what's love got to do with it?
Somehow I think conjugal visits will be easier for her than they would be for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what? Folks, if somebody you love is incarcerated, whether rightfully or wrongfully, this isn't a Hollywood movie. We're not living a Hollywood movie. You just don't spring them and live happily ever after. It doesn't happen. I just, I'm boggled, Tim. Boggled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boggled, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just the way it is, baby. Well, that's just the way it goes.
Some people think that genius switch only has one position. Turns out there's two. And mm-hmm. It's generally in the off. Generally in the off position. Yeah.
In North Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground is where he spent most of his days. That's what this story is all about, Tim. North Philly stabbing suspect caught on video wearing caution tape. At least he was warning you straight up, Tim. He's not a man to be trifled with. Police are asking for help identifying a suspect in a stabbing in North Philadelphia who was wearing caution tape. Police believe the man seen in surveillance video stabbed a 26-year-old man in the 2700 block of North Hamburg Street. Around 11 a.m. on Monday, the victim was taken to an area hospital in critical condition. The suspect is described as 30 to 40 years old. He was wearing a white T-shirt with a Captain Louis Jr. logo, dark-colored pants, and yellow caution tape wrapped around his waist. He's fashionable, Tim.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I'm sorry, my pants warned you. Caution, I'm a dangerous man.
Or dangerous caution, man. Caution, guess what's underneath here, huh? Yeah.
Portland's Hamburglar, serial shoplifter accused of stealing $670 in shrimp from Winco. Yeah, he's back. The so-called Hamburglar is back behind bars on theft charges. A Portland police detective said Barry Sanders, no, not that Barry Sanders, Tim, age 57, was arrested Saturday for allegedly stealing $670 worth of shrimp from Winco Foods. Because had it been that Barry Sanders, Tim, he would have easily evaded everyone trying to stop him.
Boy,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Detectives nicknamed Sanders the Hamburglar after catching him stealing roughly $2,690 worth of meat from Safeway grocery stores back in 2014, Tim.
Jeez.
A KGW investigation in 2017 found retailers and police frustrated by a flawed system that allows shoplifters to reoffend without facing serious consequences. Sanders' criminal history helped to illustrate the problem. Over the past decade, the Portland man has been arrested. How many times, Tim? Over the last decade, how many times has this Portland man been arrested for theft?
I'm going to go 35. I don't know. Now, see,
are you screwing with me right now?
No. I was going to say 20 because
shut down the show. No, shut down the show. You and I are heading to Mystic Lake Casino right now.
Really?
Over the past decade, the Portland man has been arrested 34 times. Well, more than 34 times, which would be 35, Tim.
I was going to say 20 because that was Barry Sanders' number, but I went 35 just on a whim. I don't know.
You went more for the sweetness?
Dave, I am going to Vegas for AEW's Double or Nothing, so maybe I'm on a hot streak here.
You're on something.
Yeah.
I know the law. I know the rules. I know what I can and can't do, Sanders told a Portland police detective during a videotaped interview in 2016. Every time I get out of prison, I steal. On Monday, Sanders pleaded not guilty to second-degree theft charge and trespass in Multnomah County courtroom. The judge offered him to stay, the judge ordered him to stay off Winco Foods property and allowed Sanders to be released while awaiting trial.
Hmm. You know, I think I know where the barbecue is being held.
Where?
Over at Colonel Sanders' house there, Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders, yeah.
Yeah. He's got shrimp. He's got meat. He's got.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah.
Tim.
Yeah.
It's that time of year.
Summer.
When children are out playing and riding their bicycles. You can hear the sound of sprinklers as they wave back and forth over yards, creating majestic lawns. You can hear the buzz of the lawnmowers, Tim, the giggles of laughter of children playing about in the yard, shooting hoops, playing flashlight tag at night. And, oh, Tim, is there anything better on a hot day than a water gun fight?
I've already set up the road spikes in front of my house for when the ice cream man comes by.
So that seems a bit overboard.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Authorities in Florida say a 71-year-old man filled a squirt gun with urine and sprayed a woman who was walking her dog. That's one way to handle things, I guess.
Yeah.
How do you? All right. Here, do you think he held the gun while peeing into the little hole on the gun, or do you think he peed into a cup, then using a funnel filled the gun? I'm guessing this guy is more of a hold the gun, pee into the hole kind of fella.
It's called constant refill, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gulfport police said in an arrest report that Joel William Benjamin approached the woman on Sunday, squirting her several times with urine, Tim. Not mine, but urine.
Oh, yeah.
The report says Benjamin told officers he would do it again, but it was unclear what motivated the attack. He faces a misdemeanor battery charge and theft after posting a $500. Oh, I'm sorry. And left, not theft, Tim. There's a big difference between leaving and thieving. Yeah. Just so you know that. At least that's what Tupac says.
Thieving and leaving.
I don't know if he ever said that. Yeah. Sounds like a great rhyme, though.
It was one of the lost tapes. Yeah. I don't think there are any lost tapes.
Yeah. Tupac released two albums before his death in 49 since he passed away.
Tim. Oh, the 50th is coming out here this year. So.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any lost tapes.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was on a phone call, somebody recorded it, they're putting a beat behind it just to release a new song. He faces a misdemeanor battery charge and left jail after posting a $500 bond. A lawyer for Benjamin wasn't listed on jail records. We have it on good authority that it was, in fact, Dave Schrader, attorney at law, Tim.
Oh.
Gulfport is near St. Petersburg on Florida's Gulf Coast. I'm glad that they pointed that out so you know exactly where to avoid this man and his pee-filled water pistol.
Now, if he had enough in him, he could fill a super soaker and really get good range on the deal. You could just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. 50 yeah. feet at least.
Huh.
Yeah.
Florida man tried to use a wig and a bicycle to fool law enforcement. Didn't we read this story? I feel like we've been through this story. A drug investigation in Brevard County had already yielded more than 100 arrests, but deputies weren't satisfied. Robert Bobby Walls was still on their list after receiving a tip on his whereabouts Thursday. The Game Over Task Force established a perimeter around a residence. Yeah, we read this last week. He dodged out through the back wearing a blonde wig, hoping that that would be a good enough escape. Apparently, I think we even mentioned the fact it's very Bugs Bunny-like.
Bobby Walls.
Yeah, Bobby Walls. Crazy old Bobby W, Tim. B-dubs, as we like to call him.
B-Walls.
Yeah. Body camera footage from Bunnell, Florida, is showing a man in Bunnell showing off his homegrown pot plants to deputies.
Oh, he's proud. Yeah. Proud
yeah,
guy.
The video shows deputies speaking with Arthur Caracino, who was smoking marijuana when they arrived in reference to a call for service. Arthur was reportedly speaking very erratically and talking about smoking marijuana. He eventually led deputies to his nearly 2-foot-tall pot plant, which he admitted that he grew.
Hmm.
The deputies asked him if he had a marijuana card, to which he said, "Yeah, yeah, I do. I'm working on it." He went on to say, "It's in the fucking house. Come on, guys. Let's just talk this out." That's his direct quote. While walking back to his home, Caracino told deputies, "You got to smoke a bowl with me, please. Come on, buddies. Let's just tip a bowl to one another in a way apiece."
Mm.
Deputies arrested Caracino and is now facing charges for producing marijuana. Once in the patrol car, he told deputies that, "Man, I need a cup of Starbucks. Anywhere local we can get one?"
Mm-hmm.
That's how stoned you are when you're asking the cops to get you a Starbucks run.
Yeah.
Tim, on the way into custody.
Yeah. Yeah. You're high at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's Tim. There's a new lady on the market looking for love.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Newport Richey, Florida. Tim, WFLA, the Flay is talking to us again. A Pasco County woman is facing charges after deputies say she assaulted a man in an attempt to sober him up. Pasco County deputies were called to a home on Hummingbird Lane. Sounds like a pleasant place to visit, Tim.
Sure.
In Newport Richey, just before 1 a.m. Sunday, and arrested 39-year-old Amber Lynn Grace. According to an arrest report, Grace slapped the victim in the face during an argument inside the home. The victim told deputies he then walked away from Grace and went to his bedroom. Deputies say the victim later woke up, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for this?
Ready.
Deputies say the victim later woke up and found Grace standing over him with a kitchen knife raised above her head. Grace then stabbed the bed with the knife, the arrest report says.
Oh,
maybe she was protecting him from the bed, Tim. We don't know. Maybe the bed was trying to assault him.
Bless her heart.
The victim told deputies he was scared he was going to be stabbed by Grace. A responding deputy noted in the arrest report that there was a slice in the bedsheet just inches away from the pillow where the victim's head was.
Mm.
The arrest report says Grace admitted to slapping the man in the face and said it She did it because he was drunk and thought it would help his intoxication level.
Sure.
Deputies also say she admitted to stabbing the bed to shock the victim. Grace was arrested and charged with domestic aggravated assault and domestic battery. Unfortunately, the couple didn't survive this little tete-a-tete, Tim.
No?
So she's out on the market looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love in too many faces.
I'm alert.
Should I put your number out there for her if she wants to give you a call?
No.
In case she's a fan of the show?
No. I'm allergic to knife point, Dave.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not know that about you.
Yeah, I
could have thought that your doctor said you needed more iron in your diet, Tim. Maybe this is just the way she was trying to help.
No, I'll get it from a nice steak, Dave. Iron steak.
there's that. The Flay is reporting to us again because WFLA Channel 8 is always on our side, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Florida man explains why he buried his friend in the backyard.
Oh.
We're going to Tampa, Florida in our final story, Tim. A Florida man says he made a mistake after admitting to burying a friend in his backyard. So what was the mistake, Tim, in admitting that he buried a friend in his backyard or burying the friend in the backyard? Which way do you think this story's going to go?
I think his mistake was admitting to it, Dave.
That could be. On Sunday, officials with the Orange County Sheriff's Office said a body was found in Greg Palermo's backyard. Palermo said his friend, who stayed with him off and on, died of a heroin overdose in his home. Palermo said he panicked because of a cop that was after him and later buried his body. I buried him right there, he said, standing in the backyard. Palermo said he was honoring his friend's wish. He jokingly said that morning while he was fishing that they wouldn't mind being buried in my backyard because it's just so damn pretty, he said. Police came to the property on a warrant search for his home for drugs. Palermo says officers believed he was making meth in his house, but he denies doing that. And here's a guy who admits to burying his best friend in the backyard, Tim. Why would he lie about making meth?
He didn't want to get arrested.
However, it wasn't long before Palermo told the agents searching his home about the body. I did it. I made a poor choice. Should have called 911, he said. Everybody said he was already dead, but I still tried to give him CPR for 20 minutes. Palermo says he has not been arrested for anything, and the Orange County Sheriff's Office has not responded to a request for comment, Tim. Interesting. So if that's the case, Tim, when and if you drop before me, should I just grab the shovel and load you in the back and head over to Krispy Kreme? Is that where you want me to put your body, Tim? Bury it in the basement of a Krispy Kreme?
I'm still getting myself together from when and if you drop before me.
It's a when and if situation. I might go first. If you don't talk out the plans, Tim, you can't have the plan happen.
What a gut punch.
I'm not saying, hey, you're doomed to go first. Where do you want me to plug you? I said if and when you were to go first. So I'm still leaving the door open. I could beat you there, Tim, and there's a good chance I could. You don't have the stress of 2 million children suckling at your bank teat, draining you of your life essence and the very existence. Did that sound bitter? I didn't mean it to sound bitter. I love my children, most of them, at least.
Bitter. Krispy Kreme. There's none left here in Minnesota. That's the thing. You'd have to take me to an exotic location like I don't know.
Portillo's.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You and I, we could get matching plots right on a Portillo's property and be buried there where every day they can go pour the excess grease on our graves.
Oh.
Maybe even some of the au jus from the roast beef.
And maybe a little cheese sauce from the fries. That would be
you
nice,
got it.
Too.
For you, the world, buddy.
Oh.
For you, the world. So I'll load the tarp and the shovel in the back of my truck, and I'll just make arrangements with your family that should you slip away like a thief in the night, Tim, I'll come claim your body, and I'll bury you at Portillo's in Woodbury. How about that? It's a nice place, Woodbury.
Woodbury's nice, but the Roseville location's kind of quaint, too.
It's a little close to my house, Tim, and I really don't want to smell your rotting corpse while trying to enjoy some delicious Portillo's food.
Oh, that's true.
This episode, although it sounds like it, is not brought to you by Portillo's. But please, enjoy Portillo's delicious menu. There's nothing on the menu that is not good at Portillo's. If you don't believe me, try every menu item like Tim and I have.
Yeah. Love me.
All right. Well, that's it, buddy. We're wrapped up for this week. And listen, Tim, for those of you that don't know and follow the show, Tim was dealing with some medical issues last week. And we played some Stanton Friedman episodes on Beyond the Darkness as an honor to Stanton Friedman, who recently passed away, kind of the the godfather of ufology, current modern day ufology. And we paid honor to him playing two of our favorite old episodes this weekend for the holiday weekend. We're just, and I hope everybody understands this, we're taking time for our family this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we're all just going to spend time with our family. There'll be no recording, but we're going to play two classic episodes. As a matter of fact, we want you to have a happy day, so we're going to share some happy days with you on the upcoming Beyond the Darkness. We've got an actual interview with Potsy and the Fonz, Tim.
Yep.
Which was our nicknames in college. I'll let people guess which one of us was which. Right, Potsy? I mean, Tim.
Hey.
And, hey, that's my line. Hey. Anyway, we've got a happier day on Sunday. And then, Tim, tell the folks what they can hear. As we talk about crimes in the world, we exposed our own crime for Saturday's show, and it's become one of the fan favorites. What can people expect to hear on Saturday's program?
Well, on Saturday, we talked to Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum about Bigfoot.
Oh, I guess that's not a crime. I was mistaken in my thought of what episode was coming. So you're right.
Yeah.
That's the episode.
We demystified
Bigfoot.
That's
not a crime. Yeah. The crime is that we don't talk more to Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum,
yeah,
Tim.
Yeah, that's what we're doing for Saturday. Yeah. We talked to Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum about demystifying Bigfoot and whether Bigfoot is real or imaginary. That's what we talked about on Saturday.
Question, yeah. Which one and or both?
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that's it for today's program. So thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more of the best in true crime talk radio. And until that date, remember to love one another, treat each other with respect, love, kindness, and please share today's episode, at least the first part of the episode, with your children and loved ones, or discuss it with your spouse to find ways to bring out these subjects that are so important to our children, because we do need to protect them. And it's our job to do that. So for Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in true crime talk radio. This is True Crime Tuesday.